Welcome to the Shiur on Ktav HaKabbalah Parshas Lech Lecha. When we started the Shiur on Ktav HaKabbalah 2 weeks ago in Parshas Bereishis, we saw a little bit of the Akdama of the introduction of the Ktav HaKabbalah to Sefer Ktav HaKabbalah. And among other things, one of the reasons that the author writes that he felt compelled to write this commentary was to explain actions taken by the Avos HaKadoshim that on the surface seem to be very strange or even objectionable. You know, he mentions, for example, the behavior of the Shvatim, the brothers of Yosef HaTzadik. You know, you take your brother, you throw him into a pit, you want to kill him, you sell him into slavery. You know, these kind of things happen nowadays, you know, so we would get a little bit perturbed, you know. And, you know, to view those people as being forefathers of the Jewish people, you know, it seems bizarre, it seems strange. So the Ktav HaKabbalah writes that, you know, it's things like that, those strange episodes in part, that he's going to try to explain to make us understand how the pshat, or even reading the simple interpretation of things in Chumash, you know, doesn't run counter to our sensibilities. In other words, our intuition would be to say that many of the actions associated with the Avos seem to be bizarre, strange, you know, even bordering on immoral in certain circumstances, unless we understand them properly. So I wanted to start off tonight with one such example from Parshas Lech Lecha, which is right smack, pretty much at the beginning of the Sedra. Avraham Avinu goes down to Mitzrayim, and at the in Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayikasher Hikriv Lavo Mitzrayim, when Avraham Avinu was on his way to Mitzrayim, Vayomer Sarah Yishno Hineinu Yodati Ki Yishu Yifas Mare'ot, he says to his wife Sarah, you know, I realize you're a very beautiful woman. When the Egyptians look at you and they say, this is the wife of this this man over here, they'll kill me, they'll spare you. So please do me a favor, tell everyone that you're my sister, as opposed to telling people that you're my wife. And that way, you know, I'll be able to survive. So, you know, the obvious question over here is, you know, we don't perceive the Avos as being deceptive kinds of people. You know, how do we defend the deception of Avraham Avinu? Now, one might say, you know, he didn't really have a choice. I mean, there were certainly many deceptions that took place during the Holocaust years that are totally justifiable and the right thing to do. You know, for a person to pretend, you know, that he's not Jewish in order to be able to escape certain death at the hands of the Nazis, certainly we wouldn't have any problems with the morality of such a move, right? One can ask from a halachic perspective whether it's appropriate to pose as an Oved Avodah Zarah. That's a halachic issue. But no one would say, oh, how you talking? You're a liar. I mean, you know, yeah, okay, you're lying. You're lying, you know, to get yourself, you know, out of the country. But the Ktav HaKabbalah takes a very original approach to this whole issue, and like many things that he says, it goes back to grammar. So in Pasuk Yud Gimel, Achosi At, Imri Na Achosi At, so writes the Ktav HaKabbalah, Yird Salomar, Haskein Bedaite Haskama Amitis, the word Imri means not say that you are my sister, but rather make up totally, you know, totally decide and totally commit yourself to the notion, Livli heyoseich li od leisha, decide that you will no longer be my wife, Rak ke achosi, but you will merely be my sister, Upnuya, and you will be an unmarried woman. In other words, to put this into English, and I think the English works very well, the Ktav HaKabbalah is going to develop the idea that Amira in this context means not say that you are my sister, but rather declare, we would say in English, declare that you are merely my sister, meaning Avram said to Sarah, at least for the time being, I'd like us to get divorced. And that way, when you say, I am this man's sister, right? again, as we're going to learn later on, they are sort of related. They are sort of brother and sister, as Rashi brings to our attention later on in Parshas Vayera. When you say, I am his sister, and you do not speak about the fact that we are married, that is not a lie. In fact, we will not be married because we will be separated or divorced. Declare yourself to be merely my sister. Not just say it, but declare it. Give it legal standing. And then, even if something happens to you, you're an unmarried woman, a single woman, you're not a married woman at that point, and the issur of being caught in an adulterous situation is not actually going to be an issur. We'll get to that. So again, it's a very fascinating interpretation. Right? And I will save myself, says Avram Avinu, from being put to death. You know, the best thing we should do right now is for us to divorce. So, how does divorce work? So, in other words, she just gets up and says, I'm hereby no longer Mrs. Avram Avinu, and they're divorced. That's how it works. I thought it was a much more complicated process than that. So, it goes on that Ksavah Kabbalah to explain. The nature of marriage prior to Matan Torah is very dissimilar from the nature of marriage after Matan Torah. Again, as the Rambam writes at the beginning of Hilchos Ishus, prior to Matan Torah, basically, as the Rambam writes in Hilchos Ishus, the nature of marriage prior to Matan Torah is what we call today common law marriage. If a man and a woman want to be married, they basically say, hey, you want to be married? Yeah, sure, fine, okay. Boom, we're married. You know, they go home together, and that's the full extent of it. No ring, no sheva brachas, no flops, no elaborate parties. You know, that's it. You know, they just make it up. Boom, and they go home. And gam oz lo hoya noig hagerish mishtar krisus. By the same token, if a couple wanted to get divorced, there was no such thing as a get or anything even equivalent to a get prior to Matan Torah. Rak mishiosiyan levesto yishalchen laatzma uishateisehi mitachas v'shusto v'seilek lo. It's just when the couple separates, so separation equals divorce, right? In other words, common law marriage. The fact that they live together makes them married. The fact that they are no longer living together makes them separated, makes them divorced. That, it was very simple. That's the way marriage worked prior to Matan Torah. Again, this is not the Chiddush of Aksav HaKabbalah. This is the Rambam writes, you know, in the beginning of Hilchos Ishus. Okay, slow. Let's go slow. He talks about all these things. Ve'al davar talay bo levad, elokol zman sheyirtzehu ohi lefrosh zem izeh parshin. And by the way, there would have been no aguna problem, because he can initiate the divorce, she can initiate divorce. You know, it's total parity with a T in terms of the divorce process. Vehu mibebreishis rabba parsha yidches. In fact, that's the Medrash states explicitly. Breishis rabba she'ein lohem b'nei noach gerushin. There was no concept of divorce by b'nei noach the way we understand divorce with a get. Osheshneim. Megarshim says that Ishlo Megarshasa, they can divorce one another. You know, the wife can initiate divorce. Fine, the Chenu Yushalmi, right? And the Yushalmi writes like that at the beginning of Kedushin. And Hine Bozeh Avram Hinechona Meot Kilo Hoyel Aderech Acheres Lefanav Latzilas Nafsho Mimaves Latzilo Gamhim Yastos Baam Zimosa. Right. So, and basically says Aksav Kabbalah. So the advice that Avram gave Sarah was, let's get divorced. So how do we get divorced? Very simply. Imrina achosiat. Declare yourself to be, quote unquote, merely my sister. In other words, shed the marriage relationship which we have. And then you'll be, not married. And that will certainly leave both of us in a better situation if you get hauled off to the harem of Paro, as indeed what happened. Now, this is a very interesting way of reading the Pesukim, but it leaves open a lot of questions. I mean, first of all, maybe not first of all, but the first thing he's going to address, we know the Mishnah Kiddushin famously tells us that Avraham Avinu kept Kol HaTorah Kula prior to, even prior to the Torah being given. So even if we acknowledge that Avram was prior to Matan Torah, it shouldn't really matter. In other words, Avram and Sarah should have to have a get in order to get divorced, even prior to Matan Torah, assuming that Avram Avinu is following Kol HaTorah Kula, at that stage in time. How that would have worked exactly would have been, kind of difficult to imagine. Right, which Beis Din would they have gone to exactly? Who would have been the Edim on the get? Okay, who would have been the Sofer on the get? I mean, there's a lot that you'd have to figure out, but fundamentally speaking, it would seem that Avraham Avinu should have attempted to carry out Gerushin according to Din Torah.
What kind of Gerushin could be? Other people, just because Avraham kept the Torah, doesn't mean other people kept it. And other people should have been what's it, in Sarah.
Interesting. So, in other words, Avraham Avinu maybe kept Kol HaTorah Kula, but that's not Mechayev Paro, right? So, from Paro's perspective, what's that? Right. But in other words, if they're not husband and wife by Ben Noach law, even if Avraham Avinu has this chumrah to follow Torah even before it's given, should that make a difference in terms of Paro? It's an interesting question. Let's see what he says. He talks about it a little bit. So he writes, "Afshe b'chol haTorah shomer es haTorah kitikuna." Even though Avraham Avinu, as a general rule, kept Torah law even prior to Matan Torah, so here you would have thought that he would have used again. "B'char bozer lehisnahei kedin b'nei Noach." Here he chose to fall back on the basic din of Bnei Noach, ki lo haya mitzuvah b'mitzvah satara, because after all, when all said and done, Avraham Avinu, in terms of keeping Kol HaTorah Kula, it was what we would call today a chumrah. In other words, he was machmir to keep Kol HaTorah Kula. He was not commanded to keep Kol HaTorah Kula. And we find particularly when it comes to marital issues, the avos, in numerous cases, fell back on Ben Noach law. Kemoshenasa Yaakov Shleachoyos, as the famously raised Yaakov Avinu married Rachel and Leah, two sisters. For Amram Nasa Dodoso, Amram, the father of Moshe Rabbeinu, married his aunt. The Fisharo Be'en Chachmasam Hatawalios Hagadolos Shisaldum is there. Right. In other words, they saw that although as a general rule it was a good thing to be machmir to keep Kol HaTorah Kula even before it was given, in this particular case they saw that it was worthwhile not to be machmir and to fall back on the regular din of Dinei B'nei Torah. And he quotes in this regard the Nefesh HaChayim, which had been written right around the same time as the as Aksav HaKabbalah. Kacha shina Avram bozel isnahin kedin mitzvus b'nei Noach la'tzolos nafsho. Right. So, in order to save himself, and probably because giving a get in a real sense probably just wasn't a possibility, so Avraham Avinu said, "Look, we'll fall back in this case on Ben Noach law, and we'll simply divorce Imrina, by declaring yourself not to be my wife anymore, and by leaving it at that." Yaakov raises an important point as well. Again, from the point of view of Paro and anyone else who might have abducted Sarah, so certainly Avraham Avinu's chumras shouldn't impact on them. They can take Sarah once she's no longer married from a Ben Noach perspective. We might add as well that which the Ramban writes, which is certainly applicable over here, or what the Maral writes, which is also applicable over here, that the same hasberim, the same explanations that the Rishonim and Achronim give as to why Yaakov Avinu was allowed to marry Rachel and Leah would apply in this case as well. So to take one example, so the Ramban writes, Yaakov could marry Rachel and Leah because it was outside of Eretz Yisrael, and even the Avos were not machmir to keep Mitzvos HaTorah outside of Eretz Yisrael. That explanation would certainly apply to Avraham Avinu over here. The Maharal writes in Parshas Vayigash, as we saw last year, that the Avos were machmir to keep Mitzvos Esei, but not Mitzvos Losasei. They kept the positive Mitzvos, but not the negative Mitzvos. And that, again, would apply to Avraham Avinu in this scenario as well. Bottom line, right, Aksav HaKabbalah, there was a real divorce that took place between Avram and Sarah, and she really was not his wife, but merely his sister when she was taken into the harem of Paro and ultimately Avimelech. Now, that still doesn't solve all the problems. Hold on a second. The MS writes the Haksava Kabbalah, you should know, Kishiloha Yolosibos Hamonos, Kashir Bolov Atsibo Lishmo Bikol Saru, Lagarish Hagar, he's not Haked in Torah. There's another somewhat parallel example where a Gerushin took place between Avraham and someone else, a divorce took place between Avraham and someone else, and there we have a tradition that he followed Din Torah to the letter. So when Sarah tells Avraham Avinu in next week's parasha, Goreshus Ho'amo Azos V'Espino, sending away Hagar did not simply mean kick her out of the house. Sending away Hagar meant to sever whatever relationship had been created on a marital level between Avram and Hagar. And there, since as the Pasuk says, Vayishlocheha, right? The Pasuk says later on in Parshas Vayera, Avram Avinu sent her out. Tirgim bo Yonasan ben Uziel upatra begita. The Targum Yonasan ben Uziel on that Pasuk writes, Avram gave a get to Hagar. So in other words, the understanding is that Avram had to give a get to Hagar Midin Torah, that is debatable also. In other words, you know, what was the nature of their marriage exactly? You know, she was a Pelegus, but okay. But she, you know, the Yonasan ben Uziel writes that when he threw her out of the house, you know, when he kicked her out of the house, he gave her a get as well. So we see that Avram Avinu, when he could, you know, he used... Right, so according to the Ramban, it works out very nicely. There he's back in Eretz Yisrael. So there, all the regular dinim apply. So whatever the reason is, we see that when Avraham Avinu can, you know, either because of the Eretz Yisrael factor or just the practical factor, you know, there he was his own boss. He wasn't traveling in hotels, you know, in Egypt. You know, there he utilizes the regular vehicle of a get and follows din Torah. It's only over here when it comes to, you know, to these extraordinary circumstances that he falls back on the dinim of B'nai Noach. But still, we're left with a problem, right? As already raised earlier, Avimelech, in next week's parasha, when the whole episode happens over again with Sarah and Avimelech, you know, Avimelech is told... you know, is told by the Ribbono Shel Olam, don't touch Sarah, v'hi be'ulas Boal. Sarah is Avram Avinu's wife, right? So what do you mean? According to the Aksava Kabbalah, that statement is not correct at all. That statement, you know, that she's actually not his wife from the point of view of Mrs. B'nai Noach. And in Lech Lecha, Eishes Avram, right. So, right. So, one second. So, let's. Right. So, there in Parshas Vayera and Chof, Pasuk Gimel, the Ribbono Shel Olam comes to Avimelech. It says, don't touch this woman. You're going to die if you touch her. And she's bulas bal. She's married. So what do you mean she's married? She's not married. Ksava Kabbalah told her she's not married. So where's that Ksava Kabbalah? Ulafishal ohoisa sara magureshes rak midin ben noach lo midin Torah lochein hutpas Avimelech lemor lo vihi bulas bal. In other words, the Ribbono Shel Olam says to Avimelech, she's even though she's not married, she is married. Now, she's not married from a Ben Noach perspective, but Lemaisa, since Avram and Sarah are following the higher standard of Din Torah, from that perspective, she's still married. So in other words, as it were, I'm going to say this somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but as it were, you know, the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't accept Avram Avinu's cheshbon as made by the Aksava Kabbalah. Avram Avinu says, well, it will suffice if we just separate and divorce from a Ben Noach perspective. Comes the Ribbono Shel Olam and says, you may think so, Avram Avinu, but I don't think so. As far as I'm concerned, unless you create a get and give Sarah a get and divorce her in that fashion, I hold that you're still married. And that's what the Ribbono Shel Olam tells Avimelech. You know, they may be technically not married, but on a functional level, from the point of view of Din Torah, they're still married. That would explain, as Yaakov raises before, the Lashonos, even in our parasha, in Lech Lecha, that refer to Sarah as Eishes Avram, even when they're in Mitzrayim. You know, Perek Yud-Beis, Pasuk Yud-Zayin, Vayinaga Hashem Esparo Negoim Gedolim V'yasbeiso, Al Devar Sarai Eishes Avram. What do you mean, Sarai Eishes Avram? I thought Daksava Kabbalah told us they're divorced already. It means they're divorced on one level, but on the level of Din Torah, they're still married. And that's Paro acknowledges as well. Lamalo, you got it to leave ki ishtachai, she's your wife. So Avram Avinu starts telling him a cheshbon, you know, Bnei Noach, you know, the Rambam at the beginning of Hilchos Rishos. So Paro says back to Avram Avinu, I don't know, Rambam, he's Egyptian. I don't know, I don't care, you know, I don't know, Rambam, I don't know, Hilchos Rishos, I don't know what you're talking about. I just know that you guys are married. That's all I know. You know, so again, according to Aksava Kabbalah, what comes out is that Avraham Avinu has this cheshbon. It's an interesting cheshbon, but it's ultimately a cheshbon which Kaviyachol, the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, rejects, because the Ribbono Shel Olam says, "I want your marriage to function as a Torah marriage, one which involves kiddushin and a get, not the marriage of Bnei Noach, even though that would have been perfectly fine from everybody else's perspective." Again, that's definitely a very different and very fascinating understanding of the story from the point of view of Haksava Kabbalah. Much of this interpretation of Haksava Kabbalah hangs on his interpretation of the word Imri Na, which means, again, I think the best English translation according to his understanding is not say that you are my sister, but declare. I think that is the best verb. Declare that you are my sister. And I just want to add to that for a moment before we see a little bit more in Aksava Kabbalah. I think one of the advantages of that interpretation is the interpretation of the word na. Na is a very funny word in Hebrew. Na is usually translated as please. Right? So why do you say to her, Imri na achosi at? So it could be, you know, the simple pshat I think is it's a lot to ask from Sarah. You know, the best way to get what you want is to say please. So Avram says to Sarah, Imri na, you know, I'm not telling you what to do, but, if you wouldn't mind, you know, please do me a favor, tut mir ataiva, you know, say that you're my sister. Na, however, very often doesn't mean please, but means now. In other words, the Hebrew word actually sounds a lot like the English word. Na means now. In other words, when we say, for instance, by the Korban Pesach, that al tochlu mimenu na, right, don't eat from it raw means eating from it now, eating from it before it's fully cooked, you know, that you're eating it before it's really ready. Imri na, if we translate na as now, so then what comes out of the pasuk is the following, Imri na achosi at. I'd like you now to declare that you are my sister. In other words, starting now, I'd like you to declare that we're no longer married, and this will sever the bond between us, and you'll no longer be considered to be an Eishes Ish. The use of the word no is very important, because of course, the declaration is uttered at a particular point in time, and not going further. So, again, so much in the Ksav HaKabbalah hangs on this interpretation of Imri as declare, not say. And the Baal Ksav HaKabbalah brings a few examples where we find that the root word Aleph Mem Resh is utilized in this sense, not say something, but declare a certain state of affairs. So, for instance, he quotes the pasuk in Yeshaya, Perek Dalet, Kol Hanosar Bihudo Biushalayim, anyone who's left after these days of upheaval in Yehuda and Yerushalayim, Kadosh Ye'omer Lo. What's Kadosh Ye'omer Lo? Right? It will be said about him that he is holy. But now, it's not just that, the point is not that it will be said about him that he's holy. You know, again, I think using the English translation that we're suggesting, you know, a person who survives the upheavals that will take place in Eretz Yisrael at the end of time, Kadosh Ye'omer Lo, such a person will be declared to be holy. right? Or he quotes also a pasuk in Yeshaya a little bit later on, Samach Aleph, Misharsei Elokeinu Ye Omer Lachem. It will be said about you that you are the, you know, the servants of God. Again, you will be declared or recognized or officially given the status of servants of Hashem. Ye Omer means something more than just to utter something. It means to establish a status, argues the author of the Aksav HaKabbalah. Right? Lo Ye Omer Loch Azuva, Ula Artseich Lo Ye Omer Od Shomemo. They will not say about you that you are abandoned. They will not say about your country that is desolate. Meaning, who cares what they say? Let them say whatever they say. In context over here, Ye Omer means it will no, you know, you will no longer have that status. And just grammatically, the author of Aksav HaKabbalah suggests that there are perhaps two words in Hebrew that are related to one another, which we oftentimes don't think about. One word is amar, as we're just saying over here. Amar, of course, means to say. The other word is tmura. Tmura means that you transfer the kedusha of a karbon onto another animal which is heretofore not kadosh, right? So in other words, this, there's an exchange of sorts that happens, not really an exchange because, you know, they both remain kadosh, but the kedusha from the original animal is moved onto the second animal and that animal becomes kadosh. The common denominator to both of these words, is that, it says the Ksav HaKabbalah, is that they contain what he considers to be the two-letter root of Mem Resh. Mem Resh, whether in Aleph Mem Resh or Tof Mem Resh, means, according to him, to change the status. Right? So Omar means to declare and change the status. Tmura means to change the status, again, also through a declaration, but to change the status, to bring the kedusha from one animal onto the other animal. The common denominator is that root, Mem Resh, means to make some kind of declaration which is going to change the status of something, be it a person, be it a carbon, whatever it happens to be, a declaration which has which has ramifications. That ultimately, says Aksav HaKabbalah, is the way to explain this interesting word. Imri na, means this idea of a change of status. Again, definitely a unusual interpretation, but it does shed a new light on what happened between Avram and Sarah in Mitzrayim. Bezras Hashem, when we pick up after the after Meiriv, we'll share another thought from Aksav HaKabbalah. Also, very unique ways of understanding a pasuk that we thought we understood up until now, but maybe we might have the opportunity to look at it a little bit differently. Okay, welcome to the second half of this year of Aksav HaKabbalah Parshas Lech Lecha. So, in Perek Yudalid, we're told of the war between the four kings and the five kings, in which Avraham Avinu intervenes, fights against the four kings, is successful in defeating them, and rescues the captured people and the spoil that was associated with the five cities of stone. So we find at the end of that story, Perek Yudalid, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Vayomer Melch Stom al Avram, Ten li anefesh baruchush kachloch. The king of Stom comes to Avram after the successful rescue, and he says, give me back the people, you know, don't take them as slaves, but the spoils, the money, all of the things that you captured, that you can keep, the spoils of war. So Vayomer Avram Melch Stom, Avram says to the king of Stom, Harimosi Yodi El Hashem Kel Elyon Kone Shemaim Va'oretz. I have lifted up my hand to Hashem, the God who is most high, creator of heaven and earth. If from a thread to a shoelace, if I take anything that is yours, you should not say, I'm the one who enriched Avram Avinu. The intent, clearly, of the psukim is that Avram refuses the offer, and he says, I'm not interested in taking anything from you, not a thread, not a shoelace, nothing. The usage of the word im, if I take, is interesting, right? Sometimes we find that im can mean lest, which is probably what it means over here. In other words, lest, I'm not interested, lest I take even a little bit from you. But again, im is an interesting word, which means if, and, it's not clear if you do translate it as if, exactly how the phrase would be parsed. If I take anything from you, if what? If I take anything from you, you will say that you made me rich. But again, the syntax of the sentence doesn't really fit that either. If I take anything from you, you should not say that you made Avram rich. Again, the syntax is a little bit difficult to understand. Also, something that requires explanation is in the previous pasuk, Harimosi Yadi El Hashem, I've lifted up my hand to Hashem. What exactly does that mean? So, right, so Sava Kabbalah, Rashi Pirish Lashem Shvua, right? Rashi explains that the lifting up of the hands is a metaphor that refers to the idea of taking an oath. In other words, basically, if we were to paraphrase the psukim, Avram Avinu says, I swear to God, I will not take anything from you. Right? Meirim anias yodi im akev la'asmi min hashvi. Right? Rashi says, Avram Avinu said to the king of Sodom, I pick up my hand to swear that I will not take anything for myself from that which you offered me. V'lo havinosi. So says the Aksava Kabbalah, I have a difficult time with this Rashi. Why? I mean, we find that lifting up one's hand in general is something that is a phrase that refers to a shvua. V'chio rechush dover yokur kol kach ve'eni Avram asher hutzrach shvua lezaruz le'nasho levli kachto. We know that Jews in general are very very nervous about taking oaths. We try to avoid taking oaths. So you, Avraham Avinu, takes an oath, what? He uses God's name, right? Hashem, Kel Elyon, he swears in the name of God that he's not going to take the property. Why was it so important to swear in God's name that he's not going to take the property? V'chilohi ezeh be'erech adam gadol ke'avram k'shvua shav v'chinam. In a certain sense, it's a needless, meaningless shvua, or an extraneous shvua. If Avraham Avinu wants to not take the property, there are two words that he could have said to the king of Sodom. No thanks. Just say no thanks. Appreciate it. Great offer. I really appreciate it. Not for me. Harimosi yodi el Hashem kel elyon. I swear in the name of God that I'm not going to take any of the spoils of war. Just don't take it. Or say you're not going to take it. Say I would never take it. Give whatever explanation you want to give. But why is Avraham Avinu, who, again, as we spoke about last time, was so, careful to keep all of the laws of the Torah, why is he swearing in God's name for something where he really could have just said, I'm not interested in taking it? Ubebreshis Rabbah. Right, right, right. Usually you swear that I'm telling the truth, I really own the thing. Here, just, to respond, that I'm not interested. Hey, okay, if you're not interested, fine, because of date, what do you have to swear? So Isaac Sadak Kabbal, he wants to suggest a different pshat for Harimosi Yodi Lashem. And he says it's based on Chazal. The Rashi's Rabbah, the father of the Medrash, Ami Rabbanon, Harimosi, right, the Lashon of Harimosi, I have picked up, Asa'an Shira, he made it into a song. Hadada Omar Zekeli Ve'anveyu Eloke Avi Ve'aromemenu. As we say in the Shira Sayom every day, this is my God, the God of my forefathers, Ve'aromemenu, and I will exalt him. And writes the Haksava Kabbalah, what are Chazal saying? The Daitam Harimosi, right, the Lashon of Harimosi, in Yano Romamus Hashir Vashevach, it means to exalt through song. V'chein Yodi K'mo Todosi. And my hand over here can be used in the sense of my thanks. Ki'inyin Rom Yodeu Nasa. You find also in Chavakuk that, the hands can be, the term yad can be used as a description for that which is giving thanks. Shepei Rusho ha'el yonim yisu kol toda. Over there, Rom yodeu nasa means the heavens give thanks. So therefore, if you put those two things together, that harimosi means I will exalt, and yodi means that I will give thanks, the way to read this pasuk is as follows. Tam hamikra yiyeh harimosi yodi, aromei mesalokei ha-shamayim b'kol shir v'todo, shelo etzarech likach mikol asher loch. I raised up my hands means I praise and exalt and thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I don't need your money. That's the statement that he's making to the King of Stone. Right? The fact that I don't need your money, I don't need to be dependent upon you, you know, you can keep your money. I thank God that I'm in such a position. Ki birkas Hashem, he ha'esharetani, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has already given me wealth, he's made me wealthy. V'lo etzareich lidei matnas basar v'adam. And I don't need to rely on you. And then according to that, v'im ekach, if I take, means pirusho shelo etzareich lokachas. Im in this context means that I do not have to take, right? Harimosi yodi el Hashem, I thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu, im ekach mikol asher loch, that I need not take anything from you, I'm already set, I don't need to rely on you. Where do we find that? We find by the Miraglim, Hashem says, im yiru es ha'aret, which in that context doesn't mean that the generation of the Midbar, if they see the land, it means they will not see the land, they will not come into Eretz Yisrael. So the pasuk means, I thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that I don't need to take anything from this man, you know, this Rasha, and he need not say that he's the one who made Avraham Avinu rich. This, by the way, may address another question which is raised by many Mefarshim. Avraham Avinu had no problem taking money from Paro. Right? In other words, Paro sends him off with gold, with riches, you know, all that kind of stuff. And Avraham Avinu doesn't get up on a soapbox and say, no, I'm not going to take anything. He says, thank you very much. You know, when you make out the check, A, V, you know, that's, he doesn't turn down the offer. So how come all of a sudden he's turning down the offer from the King of Stone? So according to Aksav HaKabbalah, he might suggest as follows. When Avraham came down to Mitzrayim, Yitzhak didn't have money. So Paro wants to give him money, so he says, okay, look, I could use the money. But now he comes to the King of Sodom, and the King of Sodom says, I'd like to give you money. Avraham Avinu says, Baruch Hashem, I have everything that I need. I don't need your money. Right? Why do I have everything that I need? Well, you know, I was in Mitzrayim. We had that little episode over there. So, you know, everything kind of worked out. But, you know, he says to the King of Sodom, I don't need your money, Baruch Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has already given me. And I certainly don't have to be in a situation where you're going to go around saying, you know, I'm the one who made Avraham Avinu rich. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has already, you know, taken care of me. And thanks, but no thanks.
I think that I was wondering, maybe is it possible that you also need to look at what the King of Stone's motivation is? After all, Stone was known for the greediness.
Right.
And he was the king of the greediness. So he was like a gigantic, and he was a rush of astronomic proportions. So he didn't want that money, and he cared about his people.
Right.
So no, I think part of it was he was trying to pervert what Avraham Avinu did.
Yeah.
And Avraham Avinu had a distance of Paro, and he knew that maybe he had an idea that Avraham Avinu wouldn't take it from him.
Right.
It's like an Avis classic Das,
right.
A case of an Avis Das.
Right.
And also Paro didn't ask, he just gave it to him.
Right. No, I think it's an excellent explanation. You know, there's something fishy when the king of a, you know, known to be greedy place all of a sudden is offering you money. You know, there's something fishy. In Paro's case, basically the money was, get out of here, you know, we'll give you money and get out of here as quickly as possible. So, okay, so that was the ulterior motive. But here, there seems to be something a little bit more sinister than that. Yeah. Right, there is no shvua over here. Right, that's his answer to the question. Rashi says that it's a shvua. He says, no, why would he make a shvua on that? No, he's saying, thank God, I don't have to take your money. That's the way the Taishtim still comes, right?
I remember who said this, that the reason Avraham took from Paro,
because he needed for his title, his Talmidim.
Uh-huh.
So he took the money because he had to support his Nefesh HaShosu Bukhara.
Uh-huh.
He needed, he was going on a fundraising, a terrible fundraising mission, and he used that money to support the Talmidim. I don't know what
said. And after Stone, by Stone the Kol was doing okay.
I guess,
or he only had 318 people, so I guess it wasn't so much the support, wasn't the mirror. What's that? Right, Rakesher Ochul Hanaorim, Hemi Helchul Yifchus Helka. Right, yes, I hear that. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, his Abraham Avinu had come with him, and we know that he toured a lot of people to believe in Hashem. So we don't, like, it seems that by the time Yitzchak came around, those people,
right.
So forgetting about why, what happened to them, why did the Abraham still let Abraham Avinu's life work?
It's a good question. I don't know. It's an excellent question. So there's a second pshat in the Haksava Kabbalah, also a very fascinating pshat. Lulei divreihem, were it not for everything that I've said before, up until now he said over Rashi, he said over a Medrash and Breishis Rabbah and interpreted it in a certain way, and now he says, I want to say my own pshat. I used the Omer Lashon HaRimos Yali Lashem Me'inyan Harim Yad B'Melech. You find in Sefer Malachim Aleph Yud Aleph, that the Lashon Meirim Yad, to lift up a hand, is actually Lashon Merida, so Lashon of rebellion. Those who raise a hand against the king are rebelling against the king. And in light of that, Harimosi Yadi El Hashem perhaps means as follows. Merida gedola b'malko shel olam haisa chashuva be'inai imekach me'mecham me'uma. Says Avram to the king of Sodom, were I to take anything from you, it would be considered rebellion against the Ribbono shel olam. So in other words, the psukim read like this: Harimosi yadi, I would be lifting up my hand, El Hashem. El means against Hashem. I would be lifting up my hand against Hashem. Kel Olyon Kone Shomayim Va'oret Im Michut V'Adstroch Nal Im Ekach Mikol Asheloch. If I were to take anything from you. So first of all, you see right off the bat, the Lashon Im fits in beautifully in this reading. You know, it knows, if I were to take from you, thanks, but if I were to take from you, it would be a rebellion against Hashem. The Lashon of Haramas Yad, we certainly, you know, lifting up a hand, we certainly find in Tanakh, is the Lashon of rebellion. The one of the sticking points is the word El. El, Rashi understood as two, right? I've lifted up my hand to Hashem as an oath. Or the Medrash understood, I've lifted up my hands in thanks to Hashem. Where do you see that El means against? So he writes that we do find, examples in Tanakh where El could mean against. For example, he quotes Yeshaya Gimel, L'shonam u'malaleihem El Hashem. Their tongues of the Jewish people and their actions are El Hashem. Now, El Hashem in that context, if you look, means their tongues and their actions are against Hashem. Or to take a pasuk that's a little bit more familiar to us, the pasuk from the parasha 2 weeks ago, Cain gets mad at his brother Hevel. Vayakom Cain El Hevel Achiv Vayahargeyu. Cain rose up against El. He rose up against his brother Hevel and he killed him. So as we see examples, says the Ksava Kabbalah, where El can mean against someone or something, and that's the way it's meant to be interpreted over here. In this regard as well. In other words, Avraham Avinu says to the king of Sodom, you know, I would take stuff from you in theory, but that would be tremendously rejecting HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It would be almost a rebellion against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why would it be a rebellion against HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So Aksav HaKabbal himself doesn't say, but we might suggest as follows: this event was so miraculous that for Avraham Avinu to say, oh, you know, I'll get paid for it too, you know, I'll come home with the spoils of war, is in a sense to shift the focus onto himself and away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Don't thank me, he says to the king of stone. I'm clearly just a kli, just a vessel representing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This was God's miracle. This was God's victory. And to somehow give me the spoils like it's, you know, my prowess, you know, my military might that caused the victory would be almost to deny the role of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu and what he did in bringing about the victory on this day. Now that as well might answer the question, why did Avraham Avinu not hesitate to take money from Paro? There, you know, again, Paro wanted him out, so Avraham Avinu says, look, if you're giving me money to leave, I'll leave. You know, he's accepting of the money. You know, it's not that Avraham Avinu never accepts money from Rishoyim, he does, you know, but in this particular case, with the King of Stone, his accepting the money would almost belittle HaKadosh Baruch Hu's role in bringing about this incredible, incredible miracle. And Avraham Avinu felt that that would be merida, it would be rebellion against HaKadosh Baruch Hu for him to accept the money.
I think maybe you could say,
right. Right. Right.
In other words, these people, the whole society is like are enemies of Hashem. So if I want to associate, to connect myself, with any kind of benefit from Sidon, is Mamshik going, you know, you're this is the enemy of Hashem, so like you're
right. Right. They're far worse than Paro and all of his guys. But 100%, you can say that as well. Right. You could suggest that as well. 100%. Okay. We wish everybody a good Shabbos and Beis Hashem. We'll pick up next week. Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha Omer, Ratzah Kadosh Baruch Hu Lizachos of Yisrael.